From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, we are obviously being bombarded every day. We get 5,000 phone calls into our office every week from organizations trying to figure out, you know, where's their money, can they be paid? So we're looking at $5.5 billion right now in bills that we can't pay from this fiscal year. We're adding to that every month, so it's actually much greater than $4 billion. And what I think I just went through was that raising taxes will not get us out of this backlog. It will not balance our budget unless we really go to something so catastrophically high that we will lose the people who are really paying the bulk of the taxes, the businesses, and more people in our state.
That's State Comptroller Leslie Munger talking about the state resuming payments for assistance to developmentally disabled children and how that grows the state's budget deficit and debt. And we'll be talking about the court made one decision, the comptroller made another. Both mean the state will be spending more money without a budget yet. On State Week, I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, State House Reporter for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Joining us from the Capitol Bureau, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and IPR. And our guest this week, Kurt Erickson, Springfield Bureau of Lee Enterprises, which includes News Outlets Indicator, Bloomington, Carbondale, and the Quad Cities. Among others. Kurt, welcome to this week's show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
All right, guys, here's what we've got. We've got the comptroller saying, well, we need to pay for assistance for developmentally disabled children. A federal judge came out and said, we need to pay for in-home care for the seniors. So just add more money to the budget that we keep spending without really having a budget in Illinois.
Yeah, Bill, that's exactly the situation. And so we had further court action as well. I'll add that some hospitals say that they're hard up, and because of lagging state payments, could force those that really take care of a lot of patients who are low income, what's known as charity care. Those hospitals also say that they're on the brink and are looking for the court to get involved and help them out. As you said, this already comes where projections say 80%, 90% of what the state paid last year is already going out despite a budget and despite still chunks not accounted for and cuts to childcare, universities. Many of us on this panel are university employees. They aren't getting any state funding yet. So it just continues to be this. In at that event, Comptroller Leslie Munger said his taxes would have to raise at an incredible rate. She says it wouldn't even be able to take care of this because Illinois is just continuing to build this backlog. So the situation is exacerbated. Yeah.
Yeah. The estimate right now is that the state is going to be $8.5 billion out of whack by December. Just this pace of spending is outpacing revenues that are coming in after the expiration of the temporary tax increase back in January.
And, you know, Bill, I can touch more on this component in terms of what's known as early intervention. That was the non-court action, but related. The comptroller and also really Governor Bruce Rauner are working in tandem here because it was through his administration's Department of Human Services, said that they were going to consider, even though a judge hadn't ordered it, as part of one of these consent decrees, basically court mandates, services that are known as early intervention. And that is basically when you have therapists working with babies who have developmental delays and disabilities. And there had been a rally, I believe it is still planning to happen when the House is back in session on September 24th. Really a big fuss being made about this because they're, you know, like these heartbreaking stories where you don't have therapy continuing for months and that could affect a child for the rest of his or her life because at that young age, it's so very significant. So there have been a lot of attention. Lo and behold, when pressure really hit, the comptroller and governor came up with the money and said that this will be included. And you have parents that are thrilled, of course. And yet it has to raise some political eyebrows, because at the very same time, you'd also had the governor, first of all, decrying these consent decrees and saying that they were too constraining and didn't like how the state was spending so much of this money automatically. And further, he had knocked the Illinois House and Senate, the Democrats, for enacting a quote-unquote piecemeal budget. And in a sense, that's exactly what this is doing. It's adding those pieces.
Well, at the rate they're spending, you can actually say the government's chugging along at more than 100% right now.
There you
spending
go.
About
yeah.
120.
Well, and it is, because what's happening is that through the existing law that requires payments to be made at a certain level to retirement systems, that requires debt service to be paid, that requires local government revenue sharing money to go out, plus the consent decrees, we're spending basically at a $36-plus billion a year clip based on last year's budget. Unfortunately, we're only going to bring in this fiscal year about $32 billion, give or take. And so the longer we go with this gap between revenue and spending, the worse it's going to be when it comes time to actually bite the bullet, make some cuts, raise some taxes. Although I would note the comptroller suggested we might have to raise the income tax rate to 7%. And I would add that would still leave us with a lower rate than Wisconsin and Iowa. But that aside, we're going to have to address this through taxes and cuts in order to make, you know, the outgo match the income.
What I'm not seeing, we mentioned taxes here, is it seems like the structural deficit, it's used sometimes, this would actually be the time to overhaul the tax system if indeed they wanted to shift away from a more broad-based sales tax. But we're not seeing meetings, let alone about that, we're not even seeing meetings just regarding the state budget, right,
nope.
Amanda?
No.
We're seeing squat, basically. Both the Democrats and Republicans are firmly in their corners, and they ain't moving.
You know, I think it's been since, and there's some argument or pushback from the governor's office on this, but that there has not been a meeting since May. And, you know, I think they might argue that, you know, how do you define meeting? But
well, Kurt, I like having reported on that, there is not, as far as I can tell, nobody has disputed that there hasn't been a meeting of all four legislative leaders, right? The Democrat right. and Republican leader of the House and Senate and the governor. Now, they say they've had individual meetings, but no. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but like our stories, right? We use these shorthand terms in our stories. And one of the things you read a lot is the governor and Democrats remain far apart on the budget. But I think that's almost becoming like a disservice to use that phrase, because that implies that they're actually working or thinking about the budget. And it seems like the governor and top Democrats in the legislature are basically ignoring the budget. They're not doing anything. They're just standing in their corners waiting for the other one to blink first.
And the governor's position is not that I'm adamantly opposed to taxes, I'll never talk about it. It's, you give me the other stuff I want, all my anti-union stuff, and then I'm happy to talk about how high we're going to raise the taxes.
I don't know about happy, but
I'm surprised that the governor has been relatively, not, I don't want to say silent, but quiet.
He's going to ground.
He's not gone out on a daily basis and said, we need to get this resolved. And part of that is, you know, if he calls a meeting, a summit of the leaders, you know, Madigan might not show up. And, you know, but that's fine. We'll
do
stories.
Didn't make Madigan look like the bad guy.
Yeah, we'll do stories about that. And, you know, I think like there's a, you know, he could have, even if it's a dog and pony show, bring in, you know, his hero, Mitch Daniels from Indiana, and say, how do we solve this budget problem, and have, you know, a big, you know, to do about that, and at least look like you're doing something. And I just don't see it.
It really is remarkable. I actually just read Government Geek here in an article in, I think it was Governing Magazine. It was, you know, have a stalemate, bring in a mediator. There's been nothing thing whatsoever. And that is astounding to people, especially as you do get these stories of services cut off, as we are entering potentially a fourth month without a budget. That's somewhat early to say, I guess, but the Senate isn't even scheduled to be back until early October. And so you can say that we'll at least go through September. And there's really just no sign whatsoever on the horizon of anything changing, anything getting close.
So how do you explain this to an outsider, just an ordinary taxpayer who probably assumes something is being done, or there are meetings, or there are people debating over here or something, that for the general rank and file voter that really there has been no action since before the fiscal year ended to address this?
I mean, it seems to me that the problem here is that what the governor is asking for, the Democrats feel like they can't give him because it would be an existential threat to them, right? The governor is at base. A lot of the things that he seems most wedded to are weakening the power of labor unions, be it through changes to local government regulations that would, you know, make it easier for governments to not have to deal with unions and change collective bargaining at the, you know, in schools and localities. He's trying to do it through the union contracts that he's negotiating with big state worker unions. And Democrats are very closely allied with labor in a lot of ways. It's one of their biggest fundraising sources. And we've seen this in other places in the country where Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin, for example, really targeted unions and dealt them a very severe blow. And, you know, if Governor Rauner is trying to follow in those footsteps, Democrats, I don't think they view it that they can bend to that. On the other hand, the governor doesn't want to give up on his big priority in his first year, because then what's he going to do for the rest of his term?
But one of those who looks at this and doesn't know the daily workings of government will still say, why aren't they at least meeting or something?
No, yeah, Bill, I think you've touched on it there, because all of what Brian said is, you know, true, and there's these political dynamics. But if you're somebody who doesn't follow this and just says Illinois doesn't have a budget, still what? Number one, other than particularly, again, universities at some point, although they still have tuition dollars coming in, it's truly these social service agencies, and there are so many of them. It's a disparate network, and those stories are individually oftentimes very heartbreaking and compelling. But taken together, it's really hard to get a grip on just who is affected, what isn't being paid for, and what is, because in part, you have all of these consent decrees going out, so you're not seeing the devastation in across the board. You're seeing little pockets of it, and that complicates things. But then, even from a take a step back, even wider, you're right. How are they not meeting? How is this not a priority? You know, would you have these people? That is the job they are elected to do, be it the governor, the legislative leaders, rank and file. And I think that if you're paying attention at all, and again, because so much of this money is going out, perhaps not everybody is, you haven't seen this major or total government shutdown. But then when you do hear it, it is, what is the problem with them? Kick them all out. I hate them all. And that there's just huge frustration on the part of the public. And I think I've talked to some people that, you know, maybe weren't happy when Governor Rauner won and had been backers of Quinn, but at the very least were like, okay, maybe something will change. Maybe things will get better. There's hope, there's new. And instead it's not more of the same, but worse of the same.
Yeah, and I don't think the governor, we've seen time and again, he has wanted to provoke this shutdown, right? He campaigned on that as far back as 2013. He was saying, hey, if we got to shut the government down and take that, then, you know, I'm not going to want to do it, but we'll have to do it to make the changes we want to make. And yet every decision he's made this year has indicated that he does not want to be the guy who takes the blame for a shutdown the way congressional Republicans did in Washington, D.C., right? So that's where you expected once, you know, we remember how quaint it was a few months ago when we were saying that state workers might not get paid, and then the governor suddenly emerged as their champion. I want to make sure you get paid. And then he signed the budget affecting schools so that schools would open. He has consistently taken a pass on all these points at which he could have increased pressure on legislators and all politicians to try and get something done. And instead, it's these kind of out of the way, not getting a lot of public attention, as Amanda said, a disparate network of very relatively low budget providers that are, you know, working for people who don't have a great thundering voice in politics, you know, people with developmental disabilities and alcoholics and victims of domestic violence, things like that, that are the ones taking the brunt of it.
And one of the things I've learned over the years is when you're trying to predict what might happen in the House, led by Speaker Mike Madigan, is that you bet on nothing. And right now, that bet is a good bet.
And when you say nothing, you mean like inaction, right? Not like, yeah, you bet on nothing happening. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're seeing also announced this week, and it affects possibly up to 140,000 some people across the state, being state employees, state retirees, and their dependents, and those could be workers at public universities around the state, that the actual state-paid self-insured programs aren't paying any money. So they throw out the fear that certain health plans, people might have to pay the full freight when they go to their doctor's office because the doctor's office isn't going to get paid for quite some time. Is this a pressure point? Is this one of those pressure points that starts moving? I realize not everything involving state workers makes of statewide interest, but it's 140,000 people at least.
And I think that will have to grow to be a larger number for it to become a pressure point. It's going to really make a lot of retirees and university employees and state workers uncomfortable, you know, facing the possibility that they'd have to, you know, pay for their dental checkup beforehand. And hospitals at this point, according to the reports I've read, have not said that they're going to require this up front. So it's not, it hasn't quite built into a problem yet. But if, you know, if this starts affecting more of the state group health insurance plans, I can see becoming a political liability for a lot of the lawmakers who represent areas with high numbers of state employees and university employees and retirees. And ironically, some of them are Republican, you know, in Eastern Illinois University and you know, part of Southern Illinois University and Illinois State University all have Republican.
I think almost all the regional state universities are in Republican districts for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking to some people about this week. I was beginning to wonder, when would these things happen, right? Because I think vendors, people who provide services to the state, be they, you know, the hospitals that take care of state employees or university employees or electric utilities that provide the electricity to keep the lights on at the prisons, right? They're used to getting paid 4, 5, 6, 8 months, even a year behind in the Great Recession. But at some point, we're going to, you know, that's going to start to get even longer and longer if this goes on. And you got to wonder, you know, is ComEd going to shut the lights off at the Thompson Center downtown at some point? I mean, I think what we've seen here, and as you were alluding to, Kurt, I know the U of I published a notice to its employees that said, Carl Hospital, which is one of the big hospitals in Champaign, or Urbana, actually, for instance, is going to continue to, you know, see university employees even, and it's not going to make them pay up front for things, for now at least. And, you know, we heard that same thing with the state fair, right? We have a long relationship with these vendors, you know, the waste haulers, the feed and grain providers. We know that, you know, they're going to work with us. We're going to be able to put on the state fair that way. But you have to imagine at some point, you know, the people who provide gasoline for the state police cars, things like that. At some point, they're going to want money. And, you know, are they going to withhold the lights? Will that be a pressure point? Will it ever happen? Or will we just keep on, you know, cruising on autopilot here indefinitely? You got to imagine at some point it becomes bad for business for those companies to keep doing that.
Well, and at some point, even the money that's flowing out pursuant to existing law or court orders is going to run out because it's flowing out at a greater rate than what it's coming in. And the day will come when suddenly the comptroller's computers will shut down and not write the next check because there's no money in the bank. That happened during the time Don Clark Nutch was comptroller, for example. And the technicians, when the computers shut down, the comptroller writes the checks overnight. So in the middle of the night, the comptroller's computer shut down. And the technicians had no idea what was wrong. They're trying to figure out, is a software flawed, or is there some hardware failure? And suddenly it dawned on them, the computers are programmed not to bounce a check, and the next check would have bounced it. And at one point during Dan Hines' tenure as comptroller, the ending balance at the end of the day after the checks had been written was 1 cent. And so there will come a point when there is no money. So even stuff that's now going out on autopilot, the cash won't be there for even the autopilot to work.
And will that be the pressure point? I mean, we all don't really know what the pressure
point is. You would think so. And if you look at it just from the politics of it, I think anybody who looks at this seriously realizes that, as the comptroller said, you can't do it all by taxes. There has to be cuts. But on the other hand, there also has to be tax increases. And so if you're a lawmaker and you know that sooner or later you're going to have to bite the bullet and either vote for a combination of deep cuts, which are going to be painful to folks in your district, and higher taxes, which your folks back home aren't going to like, then you look at when is the opportune time. Now is not a good time. Petitions are being circulated. And so if I vote for a tax increase, somebody in my district might decide to run against me, circulate petitions. I have a primary challenge. The filing date ends at the end of November. And so in early December, I'll know whether or not I have a primary opponent. But if you solve this problem in December to make it effective immediately under the rules of the Constitution, would require an extraordinary majority. So, for example, if we decide to raise the income tax a percentage point and we try to do it the day before Christmas, it would require 71 House votes and 36 Senate votes to become effective immediately. On the other hand, if we wait until January 2nd, it would only require a simple majority, 60 in the House, 30 in the Senate. So it seems to me, from the politics of it, pressure points aside, probably the optimum time to get something done won't occur until after the first of the year, which is a rotten way to run government, and I'd be the first one to say that. But if you look at lawmakers as people who are very risk-averse, that is when there is the less risk, and the people who will vote for it on both sides of the aisle are going to be people who are in basically absolutely safe districts where somebody from the other party is not going to beat them in November.
I don't know if the assumption that both sides of the aisle would vote for it even then is a good one.
Oh, of course they will, because whatever the settlement is, it has to be one that the Democrats agree to and Rauner agrees to, because why would it make sense for the Democrats to pass something and the governor to veto it? And so it'll be an agreed roll call where the Democratic leadership will say, we're going to put on so many votes. The Republican leadership will say, we'll put on this many. And that's the way it'll be.
It's one of those things where I just want to make sure and hammer home something that you said, Charlie, because I feel like for a while people would say, when is this going to get resolved? When is this going to get resolved? And you're right. To get a resolution before the first of the year is going to be next to impossible. It's just not going to happen. We're basically looking at finishing out 2015 without a budget. And the legislature can change things on a dime, but I think we're pretty safe to say that that's the timeline that we're looking at, if even then, because they haven't talked about revenue. When we talk about changing how Illinois, the governor has talked a lot about, he wants to change the tax structure. It's not just raising taxes. He wants to change that. They haven't started those conversations. I mean, they're not talking about the budget and spending and where to make cuts. They aren't, as we've talked about on this program, talking period. There's just so much that they are just hitting pause on.
Kurt, I wanted to touch upon something you wrote about this week real fast. The governor still wants to close some youth prisons, but that hasn't happened yet.
Correct. Back in June, when he announced the closure of the State Museum and a prison work camp in southern Illinois, he also said we want to close up to two juvenile youth prisons. And so, you know, now we're a couple months away from that, and I was just checking in with them to find out when you're going to make a decision, and they're not saying, and it's not clear, if they've got a review process. They say that there's a review underway, but it's not clear, what they're looking at. So there are six of these prisons. There's a lot of excess capacity because of policy changes over the years that have reduced the population. So there is they wouldn't be overcrowding if they closed one of them and moved the kids into the remaining ones. So a couple of people I talked to were pointing at Kewanee as a prime candidate for closure because they have had trouble finding adequate staff to operate that as a mental health treatment facility. So, you know, that's possibly one option. Others are in Harrisburg. Let's see, St. Charles, Warrenville, and Pierre Marquette. And I'm missing one, but there you go.
Try to get in some notes from the field in our remaining 2 minutes. I'll start with Brian Mackey.
Yeah, the group Voices for Illinois Children, an advocacy group, had a big report earlier this week. I would encourage listeners to go look it up. Pretty interesting, where they tried to kind of catalog all the various, these what we've talked about on this show is a disparate group, kind of spread out group of programs that are really hurting right now. They say 91% of domestic violence services are unfunded. Groups that, you know, try to prevent sudden infant death syndrome. Groups that reach out to teens for after school programs, try and prevent violence and gang activity. All hurting. So I would encourage you check out that report from Voices for Illinois Children.
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the state got some additional bad news, if you will, on the revenue side, in that in the last fiscal year, proceeds from the Illinois lottery dropped for the first time since 2009. This is a report from the Legislature's Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability that's saying that the money available for state programs dropped by $125 million. The explanation from the lottery folks is that, well, part of the reason for the drop is that we've actually been paying out more money to winners. Unfortunately, though, because of the budget impasse, the lottery is not paying out on winning tickets of more than $25,000. And in fact, they've been sued by a couple of big winners who say, we played the game, and now you're reneging on our winnings.
Amanda Venicky.
Well, we had the House Speaker make a couple of comments in the city of Chicago. Of course, the mayor there, Rahm Emanuel, has asked for a whole lot of help when it comes to getting the Chicago public school system in place. Madigan says that he does not want to go along with a plan that has already passed the Senate that would give Chicago public schools some money. He says that would leave too much in control of a Republican governor and legislators from outside Chicago, but he does agree with a different plan by the mayor that would let people whose home values are worth $250,000 or less get a little bit of property tax relief. However, we have Governor Bruce Rauner saying that he's against that one.
And Kurt Erickson.
Reported this week that there are 7 candidates left out of an original 14 who applied to become the next Auditor General to replace Bill Holland, who is retiring. And one of those includes another state representative, Elaine Nekritz, a Democrat from Northbrook, who is also vying against state representative Frank Martino of Spring Valley, who has, I believe, the blessing of Speaker Madigan. So that would make for an interesting floor vote. The Auditor General is must be confirmed by both chambers, a 3/5 vote.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Lee Enterprises' Kurt Erickson. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.